This is Mike Ingram, BGC Partners, here at TIP TV, discussing volatility with Sean Richards of Not a Yes Man Economics. Sean, we have a few questions as to the VIX index. What is it? How do you use it? How it's calculated? How can it help us navigate these markets? We're going to have a look through and through a few slides which I prepared, and perhaps steer a few people through, because I understand that you were an option trader at one point in time.
Yes, I was back in the day. Slightly different market, UK interest rates, but the same principles.
Well, let's hope we manage to steer a few people through. If we can look at the first slide. I thought a sensible starting point was just to discuss ideas around what volatility is, because the VIX index is known as a volatility index, although as we'll see, it's not quite as simple as that. So when we're talking about volatility, there are several sort of non-technical definitions that we might consider. One is the propensity of a price to move in an unpredictable manner, a measure of uncertainty or randomness, and sort of encapsulated this. Quite often when we talk about risk in financial markets, what we're actually marrying that up to is volatility. We're equating high volatility with high risk and low volatility with low risk. So for instance, at the moment, as I think will be picked up on some of the charts that we're going to see, we are seeing very, very low levels of volatility in equity markets at the moment, and people saying, well, actually this is such low risk that's being priced into this market, actually perhaps it's a little bit complacent, we might see a reversal of that. And then I just have one last thing, a more technical perhaps definition of volatility, which is the annualized standard deviation of asset returns. Sean, anything you might want to add?
Yes, definitely. There's various elements to this. Back when I used to do this sort of thing, I was a market maker. And what essentially you're doing in your overall picture is that you're putting a price on uncertainty and risk. Be very careful how you go about that. But my point here is this works nicely for the VIX, because the VIX is based on S&P 500 equity options in the United States. Where this works particularly well is, so we have the world's biggest equity market. We have also probably pretty much the world's most liquid options market. This is the basis of this. Where this matters is various markets, for example, the ones I traded, can be illiquid. And when you get that, the prices are unreliable. When you have something like the S&P 500, the prices are about as reliable as what they're going to be. Now, here's the thing, though. What I'm not saying is that they're right, but what I'm saying is that people perceive things to be, they should be right. And the VIX is based on that. Strictly speaking, they take and look out for options with roughly a month to go, and they take a whole set of them, all the ones with a bid price above zero, and come back and calculate a number on which the VIX is based. But here is a thing where you've got to be very careful, because we then get two clear distinctions as to how this sort of thing works. And what I mean by that is, if you look at volatility, you can look backwards and you can say what it was, and you could pick your time period. You could choose a day, a week, a month, a year. The actual option prices are looking forwards, the 30 days as we just discussed, but then we're moving to people's opinions, and this is what the VIX is based on, and these are two clearly distinct things. What has happened, but also what people are trying to think about what might happen next.
Yeah, well, we're certainly going to come to those two different types of views on volatility. Perhaps if we can go to the next slide. So I mentioned the last thing I was the standard deviation of returns. What I did actually was I just went through all the data. It was about 6,700 data points of the daily returns from the S&P 500, the options on which form the VIX, since 1990. It's about 26 years of data, and I superimposed on that this sort of normal distribution, this bell curve, Gaussian curve, as some people call it, and you see it's an approximation, but it's by no means great. But it does show you what kind of variation in return you can get from this index over that time period. I think you go down to a 9.1% fall in a single day to an 11.2% rise. I think the 9.1% fall was supposed to be seen once every 44 billion years, I think I calculated it yesterday. But it does show that volatility is very real. It's out there in that underlying index, and obviously that's something that the VIX wants to capture. Just to go back to your view on volatility, as you say, this is what we would call historic volatility. We've already seen this volatility of return. And another name for that is realized volatility. We've actually already seen it. We go on to the next slide. Something you also touched upon, Sean, in terms of what sort of inputs you need in order to value those options, which eventually form an index like the VIX. And there's a whole list there, and I won't go through them verbatim. Well, what I say is the items in green, starting with share price, are all things that we know exactly what they are. We know what the share price is. We know what the strike price of the option is, and so on and so forth. The items in blue, we can calculate to a fairly high level of accuracy. The one thing that we want to put into that model in order to get the theoretical value of the option is volatility. But we want to know what the volatility is going to be in the future, and we can't observe that because it's in the future. So what, in fact, we do, if we look at the next slide, is we run this backwards. So we know all that stuff in green and blue. We actually look at the market value of the option, yeah, from observed prices in the market. And that gives us what we call the implied volatility. It makes up the gap. Yeah, is that sort of fair assumption?
Yes, and if we were looking at an ordinary option market as you go through it, like say the S&P one, there'd be a choice of these. Can vary. Often the lower the price of the option, the higher the volatility. It's not always like that. It can go the other way. People can decide, and this is a function of human nature, they're worthless, so they're at zero. That doesn't mean it won't happen, mind.
Sure.
I've seen the reverse.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the more volatile the underlying asset is on which you've got the option, the more likely it is you'll be able to trade it in or out of that profitably.
Isn't it? And we're also, if people will be thinking of trading this, we're also in an era where people assume things that can't happen, and then they do quite a lot, like your 1 in 44 billion example that should obviously have never happened.
Yes.
But it has, and that's something for people to think about.
Yeah. Okay, if we can go on to the next slide. Let's just look at the history of the VIX. I mean, obviously, this is, again, this 26-year history. I think we can quite easily spot where the great financial crisis kicked in. And as I mentioned, at the moment, the levels of implied volatility, this VIX index, is at very low levels. Is there anything you'd want to touch upon there, Sean?
Well, again, you come to the issue of what might you like to do with that. We have some idea of scale here. I did look at the numbers. It was a briefing over 80 when I was looking for the highest number. And then you go along, as you can see there, some 30s, you get in the 40s, and then 50, 60, 70, 80.
Yeah.
And for those thinking of buying the VIX, it's something to think about. Of course, if you're on the other side, though, you now have some sort of idea of scale of how much might go wrong and how quickly you can might need to be in and out on this. And also, but you can see on the other side, quite long periods whereby it's not very much, similar to where we are now. That has happened in the past.
It does seem, we do seem to be in a sort of an environment where there's this sort of odd panic attack, you know, whether it's a Chinese devaluation or we're suddenly worried about emerging European banks or Brexit, and then all of a sudden it just sort of dies back down. And of course, we're in an environment where central banks are actively trying to suppress volatility and shrink risk premium.
Definitely. So then you get two worlds. One is the current world in which we live, where they're trying to do that. And then the other, which would be somewhere out here, would be the issue of should they fail or things start to go wrong. For example, we've seen some of that in Japan.
Okay. If we can quickly go to the next slide. The other thing I was looking at is VIX as the fear index. It's quite commonly known as the fear index. Higher VIX, as you say, higher implied volatility, higher uncertainty, more bearish markets. And you do have something of an inverse correlation between the VIX index and the underlying index on which that based the S&P 500. So, you know, VIX up, market down, and vice versa. Actually, over that 26-year period, again, I ran the numbers, about that works about 78% of the time, though, as I say, it is a concurrent indicator. Next slide, please. One thing that I was quite interested to look at was whether, as you say, Sean, quite correctly, the VIX is about short-term volatility. It's effectively 30-day implied volatility. So I wanted to look whether that 30-day implied volatility was actually an indicator of the volatility which is actually realised eventually in the market over that 30-day period. So what I did is I looked at that historic volatility, and I took the implied volatility and basically brought it back 30 days to see what extent they matched. And I, just eyeballing it, it doesn't look to me actually as though the implied volatility is necessarily a lead indicator on on the realized volatility you actually get 30 days down the road? And do you think that's a
not fair... really, but they're also, if people look at the chart there, if yeah. you see the periods where there's gaps, those yes. are the things in essence that option traders, or if you're looking at the VIX here, live for, because they're the things where you can make some money out of this, as in examples like that or various other ones.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, it's the win or lose argument. If someone's winning, someone's losing there at the same time, but that's where the opportunities are.
Yeah, okay. Got one last slide, just a passing thought for me in terms of what might give you a bit more idea about whether we have a bearish or bullish outlook, was just to look at the so-called term structure of volatility of the VIX. You generally have a situation where longer-term implied volatility is higher than shorter-term implied volatility, and that's where we were yesterday. But at times of market stress, we have seen situations where it's actually become inverted, particularly if, you know, Chinese devaluation, for instance. There was a point event which the market panicked over in August of last year, but the market seemed to be taking view that over the longer term things would kind of settle down. They were much less sure in 2011 about the Eurozone crisis. They were feeling that maybe it was more of a structural issue and maybe that was a longer term increase in the risk environment, and therefore probably pretty bad for risky assets, including the S&P 500.
And this brings us back to one of the crucial points that always comes in if you're looking at anything around sort of option trading or this sort of measure, is time. Simply that these things need to happen over a certain period, or to be more specific, that people think that they will. And how you see that, I used to work with someone who was absolutely excellent with his charts and knowing something would happen. What he wasn't so good at was which way. Well, something like this, it doesn't matter.
Yes.
Because you buy the VIX, and then if it went up or down, actually it does technically matter a little bit, but in principle it doesn't. And if only Paolo was still around now, because things like this would be perfect for him. If you're thinking of option strategies, and for those that follow this, you'd be thinking of something like a straddle, delta neutral policy, which is much more complex. In the VIX, you just do that and you're doing what people like me have called that in the past, simply in one go, done. Okay.
Sean Richards, not a yes man economics, thank you very much. Hopefully we've helped steer you to somewhat in terms of the wacky world of the VIX and volatility trading. We probably could have made it much longer, but hopefully you found that helpful, and happy trading.